Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland. This is More Talk Radio with Cecil Anseles. Today is Monday, April 3rd, 2006. It is 7:38 Pacific Daylight Time. So, for those of you who were asleep this weekend, but you're probably still asleep thinking that you don't have to get up for another hour or so. So try to wake up. For those of you who are up, we thank you and greet you and hope that you are having a great day. It's a really nice day here in Portland, nice and mild outside. It might rain, but in the meantime, enjoy the mild weather. Joining us today will be the authors of a intriguing book called Crashing the Gate, Netroots, Grassroots, and the Rise of People-Powered Politics. By Jerome Armstrong and Marcos Moulitsas Zuniga. They have written a book testifying to the new way of organizing in this new millennium, and also a critique of traditional political organization, in particular the Democrats. And so they'll be joining us in a few minutes, so we hope that you will stay tuned for this interesting conversation. Certainly they will be at Powell's, and we'll talk about that during the interview. So once you hear them this morning, I'm sure you will be interested in picking up the book and going to Powell's to see them. You know, as a matter of fact, this book is so popular, I tried to see if the book was available in the Multnomah County Library. There are 9 copies. They are all out, and there are 16 holds on the books.
16 holds.
But, you know, I think we might be able to solve that problem soon if you really want to read the book.
If you really want to read the book, if you really want to get a copy of the book, why, you can make a pledge. And how can you do that? Well, we'll have some help here momentarily, but let me get you primed and ready. If you live outside of the Portland metropolitan area, we have translators out there at 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge, out there by Hood River, Oregon, White Summit, Washington. Or if you live in parts south in the Willamette Valley, that's 100.7. Or if you live in southwestern Washington, you can reach cable and make your pledge and pick up a copy of the book at 1-877-500-5266. That's 1-877-500-KBOO. If you live inside of the Portland metro area, it's 503-232-8818. And you can pick up a copy of this book. It's an easy read. It lays everything out in very plain, understandable language. It has a way of kind of comparing various strategies used by the Republicans in a successful bid to control all aspects of the government. And it will, it basically lays out what we need to do, how we need to stop being very flabby and unfocused and running around with a lack of vision, you know. And that really has that's been the theme that's been articulated by just about every analyst that we've ever had on the show, or even those that we haven't had on the show but have written books and you've heard about or talked about. Basically, we need to articulate a vision instead of hanging around waiting for the Republican Party and the neocons, the theocons, the corporate cons, and the paleocons to die or implode.
And so, in order to make a change, the change begins local. All politics is local, and local is here at KBOO. You may become a member of this independent radio station that is controlled and owned by us, all of us, who
just us.
Just us.
Mm-hmm.
Not by any multinational.
Uh-uh.
Not by any corporate giant.
Uh-uh.
And, you know, I don't think we will be taken over by anyone.
Uh-uh.
But we need your support. Give us a call here at 503-232-8818 if you are in the Portland area. And give us a pledge. A basic membership is $40. And that's, you know, it's nothing. It has remained the same for for years. I would even,
all the time that I've been at Cable.
I would even say decades.
Since the 90s.
And there are various ways in which to do it. It's really important for all of us to participate in becoming members and owners of this radio station and making a change. We have a couple of guests, I think, who will give us some, give you some hints about how you might participate in joining and becoming a member of this radio station. So, Marlene, how might we do this?
Good morning, Cecil. Good morning to Celeste.
Good morning.
It's lovely to hear you and actually see you through this series of windows. I'll tell you, one window we've got is a window into the world because of the fine programming that we get every day on KABU, like this program that Cecil and Celeste bring you every morning, every Monday morning. Not every morning, but every Monday morning.
Every Monday morning, yeah.
Apparently it feels like every morning to me. So why don't you give me a call right now, 503-232-8818. Let me wake up a little bit. Make a pledge. Make a pledge that says, I support the quality programming that Cecil and Celeste do every Monday morning at KABU. Now, I know this is public affairs. I know that we're supposed to be serious. I know that we are supposed to be concerned about our world and engaged in our community, et cetera, so on. But I just want to share with you a few of the many premiums or thank you gifts that we have to offer you when you call. And those include the Ask Your Cat cards, a deck of 52 Ask Your Inner Cat cards. That includes 1 month of flamenco lessons. That includes 1.5 hours of tattoo time. That includes an astrological reading. That includes inner city hot tub gift certificates, $20 of tofu products, and, of course, one of my all-time favorites. Yes?
Yes?
Yes? A free monthly loaf of bread for a year from Grand Central Bakery. Now, if that is not enough to get those of you who want to be serious all the time to the phones, I will, in the next pitch break, talk to you about serious things like books on the political state of affairs and how we can actually be engaged in making those better. But none of it happens unless you give us a call at 503-232-8818. No one in this room believes me that when I pitch food, we get more calls. So people, please do not make me a liar this morning. I have to start teaching at PSU later this week. I don't want my students to immediately think, oh, you're the woman who lies on the radio. So please, give me a call right now.
What is her credibility? Completely.
Absolutely. What little I have. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-KBOO if you are outside the City of Roses.
Just make the call. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, that's it.
Be active. Be a participant. Fully participate in your community. Portland's a really unique city. There we go. Thank
there
you.
We go. There we go. We'll
Portland's a unique city, and, that's, yeah. And it is unique because of people just like you who are not content to accept what's dished up to you, that you want to ask questions, and you really do expect to have some answers. You want to participate in your community. You want to be a factor for change, and you want to rise above the status quo. You want to have some say in the direction of the community that you're a part of.
And that's all fine. I'm going to interrupt Chris right now just to suggest that if you plan to eat tofu today, then you ought to give us a call right now because we have $20 worth of tofu products from Bui Natural Tofu Deli available if you give us a call.
503-232-8818. It's as simple as that.
We were talking about tofu products, and I'm sure there's some folks who think, well, how many different ways could you possibly eat tofu? And, you know, it takes a little bit of creativity, but not a lot. It's a very versatile product. Now, let's just take a leap here, a leap of culinary skill and of imagination.
It's always a leap with you, Celeste.
Well, I don't know now. I like to think that, you know, we're grounded in something, you know. It's not totally a leap of faith or a leap. But here we go. KABU is just the same thing. It's just the same. It's a very basic product that is very good for you, but it has so many different uses. Sometimes you look at KABU and you think, oh, it's just a bunch of local folks making a lot of noise. But no, it really has some substance to it. It really has some meaning, some nutrition to it. Earlier, Cecil was talking about how KABU is not a corporate entity, and he's absolutely right. But let me tell you something. As you read, as you hear, as you listen to the way a lot of Non-commercial radio stations have had their demise. Non-corporate radio stations have had their demise. And as you listen to how a lot of the liberal bastions, the progressive bastions, have been taken over or usurped, you realize that cable is prime real estate. It's something that a lot of organizations would like to see gone, not just because it's a radio station, not just because you can get news and information that nobody else is willing to give you on the commercial venues, but the fact that this is valuable real estate just in and of itself. It's a conduit to you. It's a conduit from you. And so you want to maintain the strength of this non-commercial, non-corporate entity that brings you news and information that's hard to get anywhere else. You cannot get the type of and the quality of programming that you're hearing on cable anywhere else. Go up and down I-5, for example, or back and forth along 84 or 80, and listen to the radio stations you hear. And I guarantee you're not going to hear anything that is even remotely concerned about where you live and how you live and how you can live better, like cable is.
You know, Celeste, the thing, too, is about cable, and I'd like to point this out to the listener right now, you there at home, lots of the rest of the, you know, the mainstream media and so forth are paid, sometimes a great deal, sometimes not very much, but nonetheless, they're paid. Cecil and Celeste, on the other hand, get up, come in very early
on a Monday morning.
And do this program. And it's more than just getting up. You know, it's more than just suiting up and showing up. They do the research. They go out. They get the wonderful guests that you hear on their program. They do the background on it. They do all of that. And they do it basically for you. They do it out of a love of the truth and a desire to put that on the air and make it available to you. And all you have to do, your part, is to call us at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. And I'm speaking especially to people outside of the 503 area code. I want to really emphasize that you're not going to get to hear people like Cecil and Celeste where you live. This is something that you really need to become a member of KABU in order to support this kind of programming and to have access to voices like those that you are hearing right now. Oh. Call us now, 1-877-500-5266.
Okay, folks, just one more time, reminding you that as we go into the program now with our special guest, we still do have the astrological reading, the Ask Your Cat cards, the $20 of tofu products, and the monthly loaf of bread, all for you once you give us a call. And in the next pitch break, I'm going to suggest some ways you could mesh some of those together. But in the meantime, I'm going to get off the air and turn it back over to Celeste and Cecil.
Thank you so much, and
yes,
we hope that all of you are calling and give us a call at those numbers, and we'll check in with Marlene and Chris, who are also two very good volunteers here at KABU, in a few minutes. But first, let's begin our interesting program.
Well, as you've heard Cecil say, we're speaking with the authors today of Crashing the Gate, Netroots, Grassroots, and the Rise of People-Powered Politics. It was written by Jerome Armstrong and Marcos Zuniga. Did I say your name properly, Marcos?
Marcos Valitzis.
Okay. Oh, so the last name we don't say?
It's a Latin cultural.
Okay, got you. Okay. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and speak with us and our listeners, Marcos. And then also, thank you so much for writing the book. Let me just tell folks a little bit about you. Chime in. Don't be shy. Understood you served in the U.S. Army for 3 years, and then you have a couple of bachelor's and a law degree, and you started your blog and you started the Daily Cause in 2002. And now you get more than 1 million visitors each day. You have one of the most popular blogs in the world.
Yes. The million figures is right now we're in a little bit of a pre-election lull, so it's about 800,000.
That's understandable.
I don't want to overstate where I am right now, but absolutely, as the elections heat up, more and more people will come to the site. It's a community of liberals and organizing and talking about progressive politics. And it is from that kind of a front row look at the political process that our book, Crashing the Gate, was really born as we got tired of paying attention to politics as closely as we do. It's a five-minute news cycle, and it's very obsessive, almost dangerously so, I think. And we got tired of losing election after election after election, so we wrote the book in a way to figure out why we kept losing these elections, even though it seemed that as though the American people were with Democrats on most of the issues.
Okay, Marcos, why do we continue to lose those elections? I think everyone have their own insights into it, and one thing that I think is important is some of the things you and your co-author points out in this book. If we really believe that the American people are on the correct side, why are the Republicans more effective in mobilizing their constituency?
Well, we found as we really looked at the issue and we talked to a lot of people that there are two key issues. One of them was that the right wing has built this conservative machine. It's a network of think tanks and leadership institutes to develop the ideas and to mold them into a governing blueprint. They have a media machine to market those ideas. This is the Fox News and the Washington Times and the 700 Club and Rush Limbaugh and so on. And then they have a very effective and very modern party machine to sell those ideas to the American people come election time. This is the Karl Rove and the party committees. And what we found is that when you look at the conservative movement and you look at what passes as a movement in the progressive side, it's that our people really are still living in the glory days of the 60s and 70s where progressives made incredible gains in policy and in the political realm, in the environment, in women's rights and labor rights. And they haven't evolved. They haven't realized that this is the year 2006 and it's a dramatically different political and media landscape. While the conservatives are extremely effective at modernizing and keeping ahead of all the technology changes and the changes in the landscape.
Now, given the fact that the conservative arm, the conservative parties, the conservative minds have sat here and organized this and taken advantage of the fact of the changing landscapes, both in terms of technology and the culture and money and what have you, what is it about the glory days for the Democratic Party here that has caused them to kind of be stuck in the past and not evolve? There's been a couple of hello, are we still live?
Yeah.
Okay, great. There's been a couple of changes that would indicate we would have been able to keep up with the changing face and the changing needs for vision, but we seem in the Democratic and the Progressive Party not to have been able to evolve.
Hey, can I jump in here?
Yes, is this Jerome?
Yeah, hi.
Hi, Jerome.
Hey there. Getting to that point, the Democratic Party was the majority for decades. And they sort of developed within D.C. this establishment mindset that the Democratic Party is the governing party. Well, in 1994, we lost the Congress, and beginning with 2000, we have a trifecta of Republican rule. And the Democratic Party just hasn't gotten its head around the fact that we're the oppositional party now. We're in the minority. That we no longer govern, we no longer are even asked our opinion on many of these, you know, very serious matters. And so they haven't gotten their head around that fact yet. I think the people who have come to age in, the blogosphere, that the people that we're a part of, realize this more forcefully, and we realize that we have to draw a distinction between us and the Republicans if we're going to become the majority again.
Well, let's talk about this new era in terms of organizing, in terms of this phenomenon of the blogosphere. It seems early on, perhaps with the Dean campaign and then late other caught on as a very effective money-making organizing tool. Is that something pretty standard now, organizing through the blog, and how effective is it in terms of not only raising funds, but in terms of organizing people and movements?
I think one thing I'd like to point out right from the start is that this book isn't a book about blogs. It's a book about movement building. Blogs have a role to play, but it's a small role. It's a piece of the puzzle. And what blogs are really good at isn't necessarily raising money. what they're really good at is building buzz and nationalizing an election. So effectively, it's kind of our version of talk radio, of AM talk radio, the way the Republicans have used AM talk radio to inform their masses and to keep them motivated and to organize as well. That's what we're hoping to do with the blog world.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 here in the city. This is More Talk Radio, and we're talking with Jerome Armstrong and Marco Mulitzas, who are the authors of Crashing the Gate, Netroots, Grassroots, and the Rise of People-Powered Politics. Now, earlier, I had asked a question about what it was that kept the progressives and the Democrats from really taking hold of the vision and being able to articulate something that was really important. And I guess the flip side of it is, why is it, does it seem that despite the fact that the Republican Party has been incessantly cutting folks off the knees, they are still, even while they're about to implode, being pretty successful at marshaling and taking advantage of the sentiment, I guess? Is it a matter of them continuing to create a favorable environment for themselves despite the fact that there's been increasing amount of scandal coming forward, fiscal impropriety, and just the fact that they're willing to lie? Or is it still, are they still reaping the benefit of having laid a firm foundation of their party machine in place?
All of those and probably more. They've just done an excellent job at solidifying where they're at. You're right. They're ascendant in power right now, and what they're really trying to do now is stay in power. And even though they've had all these tremendous failures that you mentioned, they do have this incredible infrastructure in place for propaganda. They have an election machine that is nonstop, and their issue groups work together. But what's really disturbing is the things that we discussed in the area of backlash insurance.
That's just where I was going to say, backlash insurance.
Yeah, even though... You know, Democrats might take control here. The Republicans are nominating these conservative judges that are 40, 50 years old that are going to be there for 30 years. They're doing things like gerrymandering in districts that, you know, even if the Democrats win nationally or ahead in the polls nationally by double digits, that still doesn't mean we're going to win in Congress because they've gerrymandered all these House seats all over the nation. And so they're starting to institutionalize their majority, and that's what's really disturbing.
And in terms of institutionalizing their majority, it seems to me a very good way in terms of organizing. You have an idea, you organize, you mobilize, you take over, and then you maintain power. Earlier, I think, Jerome, you mentioned that the Democrats did not realize that they are indeed the opposition party and have, you know, for most of the 20th century, they were the majority party. They've been on the outs for a number of years. What does it mean to be an opposition party, and how might the Democrat change the way of thinking?
Well, the number one thing we have to do as Democratic candidates trying to upset incumbent Republicans is draw distinctions between what the Democrats would do and what the Republicans are doing. And too often what you've seen with Democratic candidates, and this really explains the rise of Howard Dean, was that Democrats were basically saying, yeah, we kind of like what the Republicans are saying, but we're Democrats, we're a little bit better. They were just trying to muddle the water and you know, do things like Republican light or whatever. Howard Dean tapped into this whole vein of oppositional politics that was emerging amongst progressives that were active in the Democratic Party, and it was about drawing distinctions between what the Republicans are doing and what the Democrats would do.
Yeah, what's really disturbing about this election in November is that most key Democrats are afraid to create those distinctions. They're saying, well, Republicans are really screwing things up, therefore we're going to make big gains in November. What I'm seeing as we travel the country is that people are saying, well, Republicans are screwing things up, so I won't vote Republican. But Democrats really aren't giving me a reason to vote for them, so I'm not going to vote Democrat. I'm just not going to vote. And we're seeing in a lot of the early elections this year, in special elections and primaries, people are not coming out to vote. People are really disenchanted with the political process. And until Democrats really start clearly stating why they are different than Republicans, I have a serious concern that we're not going to make big gains that we're predicted to make.
Well, let me ask you, following up on that, on making the distinction, because I think one of the clear points is this the war in Iraq, and you mentioned special election. Now, some people, Kerry type Democrats, are trying to recruit veterans of the conflict to run, and there was that race, where was it, with Duckworth and
Kathleen Sagalas, yeah.
Yeah, and that seems like a classic example of someone who had organized for a long time, was very independent, and the big wigs said, no, this is the person that we should have. Is that a good tactic?
Well, those kind of battles are always going to happen. You know, you have the party infrastructure in the establishment in D.C. that wants it one way, and the base activists on the ground that see it another way. And that's really, you know, that's actually the sign of a healthy party, that there's strong primaries where ideas are going off at each other, and, you know, we can have this battle during the primary. I don't think that that's necessarily that big of a problem.
Okay.
No, absolutely not. In fact, primaries are good because it allows the campaigns to test their message. It allows them to do a test run working with their ground operation. And it allows the locals to decide on the direction their party's going. At the end of the day, the people in that district decided that they were going to go with Tammy Duckworth over the Christine Sagalas, who had done all the local organizing for years. You know, you got to trust the people in the district. And if a party has one idea and some of the locals have another idea, great. But at the end of the day, as long as the people in the district make that decision on primary election night, I think we have a great, great sign of a healthy party.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, and we're in the middle of our pledge and membership drive here. This is an opportunity to continue the type of dialogue that you can come to expect on our morning. I start to say AM, but I'll make it clear, our morning talk strip. And it keeps you fresh. It gives you an opportunity to not only discuss situations, politics, trends, with the programmers, but with the office too, and with political pundits, with analysts, just different folks. But that's not a cheap exercise. It comes at a cost. Right now, we have two things that are in effect. We have technology and we have access that we are thankful to previous members for bringing us. We have the technology that allows us to balance these two calls independently and allow one line for you to call in. But the fact that we can also afford to make long-distance calls, very basic things that your membership provides. So do you really care? Do you appreciate this opportunity? This is a great chance to call in.
Chris, how might they call in?
503-232-8818. Or outside of the area code, it's 1-877-500-5266. And I would indeed submit to you that if you are outside of the 503 area code, this is probably even more valuable to you than perhaps to people in the Portland area, where by word of mouth, by conversations in cafes and so forth, at the workplace, people do disseminate news amongst themselves. But living in the outlying areas, this is really a breath of fresh air. I'm so excited about the guests today because, for one thing, last week we had a story on the news. The Daily Kos published a hysterically funny photograph that a conservative in this country used to claim that everything was just absolutely peachy in Baghdad. Unfortunately, they used a photograph of a Turkish street with signs in Turkish. I love that. And now here we have these, we put the story on the news. I was all excited. I always look at the Daily Kos. And then Monday morning, here we are, guys from Daily Kos. That's how this radio station works. That's why it's so important for you to call 503-232-8818. Make the phones ring now.
Folks, this is Marlene. The name of the book is Crashing the Gate. We are speaking with the authors this morning. And if you would like to get a copy of that book, the number is 503-232-8818. And just to sweeten the deal a bit, here is an idea. You can call in. You can tell us that you would like a copy of that book, Crashing the Gate. And if you increase your membership by not very much at all, you could also get a gift certificate to the Inner City Hot Tubs. So here's the deal. You could invite a friend to the Inner City Hot Tubs, and while you're there, you could discuss crashing the gate.
Excellent.
And
uh-huh.
then even
you can strategize.
You know, pull out a copy of the book, and perhaps afterward, because you and the friend had such an engaging discussion about crashing the gate, you could go do some flamenco dancing because you have taken some flamenco lessons, which you also got through your membership at KBOO. You see, things work
like
in beautiful ways. Things are sometimes cosmic. It's quantum physics here at physics. It's quantum physics here at KBOO, but it all starts by a call at 503-232-8818. Or outside the Rose City, 1-877-500-5266.
Now, I know there are some people like me and say, well, you know, I can get that book in the library. These gentlemen will be here in Portland soon. But if you went to the library, the books are... It's not available. There are, I think, 9 copies in the Multnomah County Library. They are all out. And the last time I looked, there are 16 holds. So.
Well, okay, Cecil. Now, you know, some of us might prefer the library. We might not mind a wait for a year or two until we can get our name to the top of the list. But you cannot get the Ask Your Cat cards at the library. Neither can you get an hour and a half of tattoo time or a monthly loaf of Grand Central Bakery bread.
There you go.
So, you see, I am just being silly this morning, but I'm just telling you folks, you need to give us a call. One other thing that you cannot get at the public library, and I'm a big fan of the library, folks, so don't call in and say, oh, they hate the library, because I love the library. But one thing you cannot get at the library is KBOO. So you need to give us a call at 503-232-8818. You don't have to wait in line. You don't have to put your name on a list. And you can get what you need at KBOO in terms of news, entertainment, and even wonderful, wonderful thank you gifts when you become a member. It's 1-877-500-5266. You can also join online, www.kboo.fm. Call us now. Let Cecil and Celeste know that the background work they did, all on their own time, to bring to you the authors of Crashing the Gate this morning is worth something to you. Let Cecil and Celeste know that they offer the kind of programming that keeps you engaged, that you look forward to listening to. Give us a call now at 503-232-8818. Pick up another one of those thank you gifts. But most importantly, let us say thank you to you for choosing to call.
Right.
This is how we build community. This is what community looks like, people. This is how your voice contributes to the many voices and makes all of us a lot stronger. Information, knowledge is power. And if that's something that you feel that the activist community, the progressive people like yourself, really dearly need right now, this is how to do it. Call us, 503-232-8818.
I'd really like to hear what Jerome and Marcos have learned about both corporate and commercial free radio in terms of the rise of people power politics. We talk about the net roots, we talk about grassroots, but in terms of being able to marshal the airwaves, how effective have you found that to be for spreading the word of a new vision, trying to help people come together and articulate a new and more powerful vision?
Well, one of the areas that it's come forth with in terms of what we deal with mostly, which is electoral politics, is that you have a much more fragmented media now than you used to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember in the 1980s, it was all about you could basically reach everybody through your broadcast network television. And nowadays, the media is so fragmented, people can go online and get their sources of news. They can have individualized cable stations and radio, that it's much more fragmented. And our political establishment with the Democratic Party has not adapted to that at all. They're still using network broadcasts to reach everybody when they do need to go out into radio stations and like KBOO or otherwise and to reach the audiences. Just one other thing to mention. When we wrote this book, we decided that we weren't going to go out and sign off with a Murdoch-owned publishing company. So we found Chelsea Green, and they do all their small publishing, indie house, and recycled printed matter. So it was an important thing for us when we went out to publish this book.
Yeah, you know, there's a little bit of irony here because we had this fragmented media market, of course, But it's all owned by about three companies.
Yes.
So you have a very homogenized, you have a lot of outlets and you have a lot of fragmentation of audience as they tailor this programming to smaller and smaller niches. But, of course, it's all owned by the same corporation. So certain voices and certain information are not getting out. So that's why it's very important to have commercial free radio to make sure that a lot of those voices are heard.
Excellent. And this is an opportunity if you want your voice to be heard by becoming a member. Just dial 503-232-8818 inside of the metro area. Outside, 1-877-500-5266. And if you'd like to speak with our authors, you can do so by dialing 503-231-8187 and join in the conversation. Great.
And do we have a caller?
No, I'm looking at the engineer, and we don't have a caller, so this is your opportunity. We have one line that's open. Because we got a little bit of kind of a shortened and truncated amount of time, I'm going to kind of skip around a little bit. But in the end, what I hope that will do will create a thirst for people to pick up the book and read the book. One of the things that we noticed that is really important within the Democratic Party and getting some of the change, if I guess you will, of the old guard, is the ability for candidates to connect with money and to be able to be funded and to get the resources to buy time, to get out and to do their campaigning. But money seems to be a double-edged sword within the Democratic Party. And you kind of talk a little bit about it within the chapter called The Gravy Train. Can you kind of sum up a little bit about how it's been kind of what I guess I call it the double-edged sword more so than you do?
I don't know how much of a double-edged sword it is. I think all in all, it's a terrible situation for the party. Obviously, you have a core group of people in D.C. who not only run campaigns, but they also tell our Democratic elected officials how to talk and how to act and how to vote on bills, and they also run the party committees because there's this sort of revolving musical chair sort of situation where a consultant for one of the party committees this cycle, next year is going to be working for a candidate, the next year after that he's going to be running the one of the party committees. So these people are essentially creatures of Washington, D.C. They've lived in D.C. way too long. They talk to each other and only each other. They all listen to the same media outlets. They listen to Don Imus and Chris Matthews and you know, those sort of people, Beltway conventional wisdom type of people, and they are absolutely wrong on absolutely everything. I mean, these people, we have a very funny segment in the book where we're talking about campaign finance reform, and the consultants were convinced that this was going to absolutely kill the Democratic Party. They called it the Democratic Party suicide bill, and we have a quote from one saying there's unanimity amongst consultants in D.C. that this is going to kill the Democratic Party. As a result, campaign finance reform has actually given the Democratic Party a new lease in life because it has forced it to reconnect with regular people as opposed to just millionaires and billionaires. So this is a crowd that's running the party to the ground. They do not let any fresh blood come into it. And there's a lot of really effective consultants. Most of them are out in the states. They can't get into D.C. because they're locked out by this kind of cabal. And they're running the party to the ground, so we're hoping that we can get some of this new blood in. We're hoping that this existing crowd is shamed into retirement because their track record is absolutely hideous.
Well, that's part of what I mean, I guess, to articulate it a little clearer about it being a double-edged sword. To get close to the money, you have to be close to the old guard, but being close to our guard means in that you pay the price of losing, I guess, your focus and your vision, or at least not being able to articulate that you have a fresh vision.
In a lot of cases, yeah, losing your integrity. I mean, to participate in this, which is increasingly a scam, you have to compromise your ideals and what you stand for. I think the answer is going to come from, and Marcos spoke about campaign finance reform and how that took the soft money out, and it makes the Democratic Party rely upon small donors. And so ultimately, the answer is going to come, I don't remember if you remember after the election 2004 where Move On sent out that email, we bought the party, we own it. Yes. That's the kind of attitude that we have to take towards this. You know, similar to like a shareholders who own portions of the company. The people fund this party more than ever now through small donations. And so collectively we have this power. It really is people-powered politics now, more and more so in the Democratic Party. They can no longer go out and get million-dollar donations, so they rely upon people to give them 50, 100 bucks all over the nation. And if we can, you know, unite. And I think the blogosphere helps a lot about this with getting out the message to help to do this. If we can really unite and demand change within the Democratic Party, or tell them, you know, look, if you're not going to do it, we'll find some other progressive vehicle to fund campaigns and elections of our candidates. That's how we'll begin to get change.
You're listening to KBLO More Talk Radio, and we've got the note here from our engineer. We've got both of our lines tied up with our guests, so we can't get the callers on. However, you can call, leave your question with the engineer, and we've been beating a path back and forth here with comments and sharing notes. So if you want, you can call 503-231-8187, leave your question with the engineer, and we'll be sure to get it, and we'll try to weave it in.
And speaking, you know, this is a off-year election, and it's both parties are gearing up. What do you think the Democrats Party has learned and is doing right this cycle, or needs to improve on?
What's the Democratic Party doing right? That's a tough one.
I'm trying to be optimistic.
They're not doing television ads or their advertising right. That's one thing.
Well, that problem, unfortunately, is not going to change at all. I think what the Democratic Party is doing somewhat right is that they're listening to their base a little bit more. At least they're aware of them. And by the base, it's probably what I mean is the people that are active on the blogs and the blogosphere, which probably number, you know, a couple million at least that are progressive activists that are aware of the blogs and are going out and listening to them. And I think that's beginning to catch the ears and the notice of the people in D.C. So at least they're becoming aware.
I'm kind of glad Jerome took that, because I was having a hard time thinking of things that are going right. But actually, I did think of one. And when we wrote the book, we were pushing this notion of a 50-state strategy where we wanted Democrats to challenge Republicans in every single race across the country. And when we first started writing this a year ago, we were mocked for this assertion. People laughed at us. We had these political prognosticators in D.C., talking about how naive we were, how ridiculous the notion was, and they were clinging to the notion of a swing state strategy, right, where you're only going to challenge, you're only going to spend money, and you're only going to pay attention to those districts and those states and those races where Democrats have a so-called realistic chance of winning.
Mm-hmm.
And we're seeing that a year later, it's become conventional wisdom that Democrats do need to challenge everywhere. We cannot abandon Democrats in states and districts that are very, very conservative, because they deserve a national party and they deserve the chance and the choice to vote for Democrats just as much as somebody in a swing state or a swing district has. So it's been interesting seeing that evolution of that idea from pie in the sky naivety from these loser bloggers into, yeah, of course we need to challenge. If we're going to be a national party, we need to act like a national party, and that means not leaving any single race unchallenged. And of course we're not going to challenge every single race. You have to find candidates, et cetera, but we are getting closer and closer to that kind of ideal, and there is an acceptance within the party and the establishment that this is the right way to go.
And if that is the case, we saw in 94 the House Republicans nationalized the election. Are you saying that's something similar the Democrats should do? Are doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think they're doing it. I think it needs to happen. It's funny because Republicans have been so good at nationalizing the last few elections on national security and gay bashing, and suddenly this year they're realizing that every single national issue works against them, so they're trying to localize. And Democrats, I think, you know, this goes back to creating clear distinctions. I think too many Democrats are content with the notion that they're going to get votes just because Republicans have screwed up so terribly that people will vote for Democrats. I'm not seeing that. I think Democrats need to be better at laying out why we are different than Republicans, how we're going to do things differently than Republicans, and therefore give people an actual reason to come out and vote.
Well, you know, one of the things that you mentioned in your book was the fact that, especially with 78, with Bill Clements Jr. becoming the Republican governor of Texas and being the first one, is that the Republicans sat down and they analyzed, just as you mentioned, the fact that although the South had been primarily Democratic, there were some key issues on which the Republicans can come in and either co-op or articulate in a different fashion. And basically what it was you mentioned in the book is that they took the fight to the states that they needed to change. And there's, as you mentioned just momentarily ago, a strong reluctance on the part of Democrats to do that. Also, you talked about how single issues are going to be difficult to accommodate. But given the fact that for a lot of progressives, it seems to be the single issues that are the driving force, how can we take the battle to the states where the progressive parties, the Democrats, are the weakest and articulate some type of vision or some type of plan that embraces both whatever the single issue may be there and some kind of way challenge the status quo?
Well, we talk about the book, two really big success stories we had in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
Republicans obviously did really well in the year. George Bush did really well in the states of Colorado and Montana. In Montana, Bush won 59-39.
You're still on.
Okay.
And we were able to, Democrats were able to make incredible large-scale gains in those two in those two states, in Montana and Colorado. So it was because they were able to work with the issue groups in different ways, and we talk about how the issue groups really were part of that. But the fact is that it is a strong model. It can be done. And we were just in Texas, in Austin, meeting with a lot of the state issue groups.
Continue.
In Austin, where these issue groups finally decided to come together at this meeting.
There's some distractions here.
Yeah.
But continue.
Okay. We had this meeting in Austin, and what happened is these issue groups got together, and this is the women groups, the environmental groups, labor, and they agreed at this meeting that we were at to start working together, to start sharing membership lists, to start splitting up the state into zones of responsibility the way it was done in Colorado. And one of the participants said, well, you know what, at this point, what do we have to lose? And I think it's that realization that we really don't have much to lose anymore that is driving a lot of these groups in a lot of parts of the country to start working together, because the people are starting to realize that the status quo isn't doing anybody any favors. It's not doing any of the issue groups any favors, and it's absolutely not doing our country any favors.
We're speaking this morning with the authors of Crashing the Gates, Netroots, Grassroots, and the Rise of People Power Politics, Jerome Armstrong and Marcos Molisas. And they are speaking with us. We invite you to give us a call. You won't be able to talk to them directly, but you can share your questions. And I think we have a couple of questions.
We have a couple of questions here. One of them is more of a statement than a question. But it basically states that we need to change the Democratic advisors and then make sure that the machines that count the votes are verifiable. At this particular time and with the system, the voting machines and Diabo firmly in place, how realistic is that, just that part of the question or the statement?
Well, when we talk about Diabo, it's clearly an issue, but I'm less concerned about Diebold than I am about more tangible voter suppression efforts. I mean, if you look at the Ohio report by John Conyers,
yes.
Congressman John Conyers, the issue wasn't the voting machines. The issue was people who were put on the felon list prevented from voting when they did not belong, when they were not felons.
Right.
It was the polling place intimidation efforts, where you had these people looking like they were going to crack heads if you went in and voted.
Right, and switching the balloting places.
Right,
it was switching
balloting places. It was not having enough machines in some of the urban districts, so that if you lived in the suburbs, which were very heavily Republican, you got in and out in 15 minutes. if you lived in Cleveland, it took 8 hours to vote. Now, those are very tangible. Those are very tangible voter suppression efforts, and very real. And those are the things that I think we need to be, I think, immediately more concerned about than Diebold. And as much of a as much of an issue as the voter paper trails are and things like that, I think they're doing much more effective jobs of suppressing our vote otherwise than they are with the voting machines. So I think the focus on Diebold is almost a little bit almost kind of like off the trail of the real problem.
Right, right. Another question that we had was in terms of nationalizing the elections. What are the two or three hot button issues with grassroots Democrats that the leadership needs to hear or is not advocating? What are concerns of grassroots advocates that those in the Beltway need to hear?
Did we lose Jerome?
Yes, yeah, I think he's back.
He's back now.
Okay. Yeah, this is Jerome. I'm back on. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If I were to say one issue that hello.
Yes.
Yeah, you're here.
Okay. If I were to say one issue that the Beltway Democrats need to hear from the grassroots activists, that they need to focus on not just the battleground states or not just the key contests in one state or another, but on races where Democrats are running everywhere throughout the nation. And they need to decentralize their efforts more from just one place to all over the nation. Because if the Democratic Party is going to become a national party again, it's going to be because we're active in all the states. We're not just going after the battleground ones. Yeah, as far as specific issues, I mean, one of the things that nationalizing the party obviously does is that it allows for the party to come up with a message that truly resonates nationwide as opposed to one that just resonates in certain certain swing districts. But right now, obviously, the big one's Iraq, right? I mean, there's just no avoiding the issue. It dominates the discussion. And again, you know, Democrats are afraid that talking about Iraq is going to make them look weak when it's clear by the polls that over two-thirds of people now really want us out of Iraq, and they're looking for leadership on the issue, and we're not getting that leadership on the issue. So that's clearly one of the issues. You know, then you go beyond that, and people say they want to talk about healthcare and they want to talk about education. But what I found is that they may want to talk about that, but they're not going to really respond to that. They're going to respond to the one big issue, which is Iraq.
You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7. This is More Talk Radio. We're speaking with the authors of the book Crashing the Gate: Net Roots, Grassroots, and the Rise of People-Powered Politics, Jerome Armstrong and Marcos Melitzas.
We were talking about in terms of how the Democrats might regain power. And one of the things that I'm not sure whether it was Jerome or Marcos who mentioned that the thing that the key issue is Iraq. And again, another listener called in and mentioned that she is not hearing clear Democratic position from the National Party in terms of the position on Iraq.
Well, with having an exit policy?
In terms of an exit strategy.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to be a time of confusion. Is there a clear indication of the National Party getting their act together on Iraq in terms of this war for this election?
Probably not anytime soon. And the real problem with that is that even if the Democrats were to win the election, they haven't really won anything because they haven't run on an issue. So
right. The
mindset right now in D.C. is that the Republicans are self-destructing. Everybody can realize how corrupt they are as a party, and there's no doubt that the people will come and elect Democrats. That's sort of the predominant mindset. But if they haven't advocated for changing anything, then we're just going to be at a standstill with the Democrats in power and Bush in the presidency. Yeah, you know, there's an old adage that you know, we find to be very true, political thing, and that's Republicans poll, or Democrats poll to find out where the people are, while Republicans poll how to convince people to get behind Republican ideology.
Exactly.
Right? So we poll to kind of wave in the wind and try to go where the people are. They poll to move people to their direction, and it's killing us. And this is a perfect example of it, where Democrats are afraid to lead. They're afraid to stand out. And there are certain reasons for it. I mean, one of them is this lack of a liberal partisan media. So anytime a Democrat takes a courageous stance, you know, he or she will get absolutely pummeled by the right-wing media. not much support there on the left to back them up. So we're hoping to change that little by little by telling them, by teaching them that we can have their back if they're courageous, and we're going to beat them up if they're not. So this is all a long-term process. You know, it took the Republicans 30 years to build what they have. You know, we're hoping to build ours. We started building ours last year. Right. Hopefully we build it within the next 10 years. But fact is that they don't want to lead. They're afraid to lead. They want to go where people are. But when you're always chasing people, you really don't stand for very much, and it doesn't seem like you have core convictions. So that hurts us.
You know, you articulate quite well in the chapter laying the groundwork how the Republican Party has put together a media machine, and I'll say it's both a positive and a negative one. By positive, like you said, they articulate the positives that the party has to offer for a broad spectrum of voters. You get your soccer moms, you get your 24-year-olds out in the country, you get your business people in middle America and in the Midwest, and then there's the negatives, and those are the ones that come out and they attack the various messages or the ideas or the policies that the progressives set up. And so it makes it an effective 1-2 punch. Have we as progressives come up with anything even remotely like that to help both advance our causes and then to attack the others, and as you said, take it on the offensive in terms of media? I'm saying,
well, we have not really. I mean, it's the realization is there that we need to build it, and the money's starting to flow in. I think the closest thing we have to say right wing radio is the blogosphere. And,
right.
And there was, it was funny because when we began in 2002, when we started building our blogs, Jerome and me and others, there was this notion that there was no market for liberal media, and that this was the excuse that, say, Clear Channel would use to prevent liberal voices from being heard on radio networks. Mm-hmm. It was always conservative. Only conservative radio worked. Liberal radio did not work. Mm-hmm. We proved in 2002 and 2003 that there was a market for liberal voices in the media landscape. That helped give rise to Air America, which was the first commercial liberal network. And so now we have Air America. We have the blogs, which are still growing at an incredible rate. And there is a venture fund that's raising money to create a cable news network, kind of like Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a realization that we have to build these institutions and to compete in the battlefield for ideas in this media, modern media landscape. So it's happening, you know, but it takes a while. I mean, building a network takes, you know, 5, 6, 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something you set up and throw up there. And so at the best estimates, Rush Limbaugh reaches about 20 million people a week, which is about a third of the Republican base, which
mm-hmm.
is pretty extensive reach.
That's a hefty mm-hmm. amount there.
The blogs maybe reach, you know, a million or two. You know, so we're way behind, but
right.
we're building something. And 3 years ago, we had nothing.
Right.
So this is something. I mean, it's progress, but it's going to take a while to build a truly competitive machine.
So we have the infrastructure in terms of getting the machinery, so to speak, to get the word out. But one of the things that you articulate, and you also borrow from George Lakoff, is that it's not just having the infrastructure, it's not just having a message or a one-liner, but you got to have some solid ideas to go with it. And that's the other part that we seem to be missing, is having the big ideas. And that goes back to earlier, the whole statement about having a compelling vision. We just don't seem to have the idea factory. You know, they're looking at it being a message machine. The Democrats are looking at it being a message machine. And really what we need to do is formulate an idea factory. In other words, come up with the big, compelling ideas. So
when we first started writing this book, we approached it with that same perspective that
mm-hmm.
you know, you can look at the Democratic Party and it just doesn't have a brand. You know, if you were to look at it as
right.
a product, it doesn't have a brand. If you ask like 10 people on the street what the Republican Party stands for, they'll all tell you something, you know, even though it's not true, they'll say something like, you know, strong defense, family values, and anti-taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's a pretty solid brand they have. The Democratic Party just doesn't have that. But when we went out and started interviewing people all over the country, and we went to 20 different states and talked with 160 people, and at least, and with interviews and putting this together, the research for this book, Well, we found out that there were just structural problems within how the Democratic Party is run, and I think Mark was already touched on them earlier in terms of the issue groups not coming together, a consultant mafia, basically, that's been stuck in tactics and strategies from 20, 30 years ago, and a Republican machine that just dominates ours. And so we have to get to these more like, you know, these are structural problems that we have to address as a party and a progressive movement before we can even get to the solution as far as to how the branding is going to come out. And if I were to suggest how that's going to ultimately play out, I think it will come from candidates themselves that are elected on one thing or another. You can sort of look at how Ronald Reagan came onto the scene in the mid-70s after the Republicans had been working on their movement through the conservative movement for over a decade, and he put it all together and ran and, you know, totally swept the nation with a conservative mantra that had been in the works for 15 years. So ultimately, we're going to have to find a presidential candidate or you know, local leaders that where it trickles up that message, that compelling brand that restructures the Democratic Party.
Yeah, but, you know, right now the problem is we could have the absolute best message in the world. I mean, this could be the message to end all messages. And we don't have the ability to really deliver it to the people, to market it, and to sell it. We just don't have that ability. We don't have the infrastructure to support the message. So the message is important, but until we have the machinery to wield it, it's almost wasted.
So you're saying that you think that the infrastructure, the radio stations and the blogosphere that we mentioned earlier are still not mature enough and strong enough to support whatever message we could come up with?
Not in terms of numbers of viewers or numbers of readers or listeners yet.
And as you suggested earlier and just now in terms of Ronald Reagan and the conservative movement, this is a long-term effort. As you mentioned, judges are being appointed in their 40s and 50s. They'll be there for, you know, for decades. And the maturation of a movement takes time. Are there things we can do in the interim as we get our act together?
Yeah, absolutely. The key is to organize. I mean, at the end of the day, the right wing has what it has because it organized. In 1964, they were all behind Barry Goldwater. He got blown out of the water. They could have gone home. They could have, you know, they could have cried in their milk. They could have blamed other people for their problems. They could have blamed Diebold or whatever the equivalent was back then. They didn't do that. What they did is that they organized. They took over their local parties. They took over their local school boards and their local governments. And gradually they worked up the ranks by this dual process, right? Take over the party, take over the government. Sorry about that. My kid's having a rough morning.
That's okay.
So they organized, and eventually they got Ronald Reagan in 80, and they got Newt Gingrich in 1994, and we have what we have today. So they never stopped working on behalf of the issues they cared about. And one of the things that I worry on our side is that people are dejected because we've been losing so much that they're tuning out. And what they really need to do is the absolute opposite. They can't tune out. There's a reason Democrats aren't winning. It's because they're incompetent and they're still living in 1960, 1970. The best way to counter that and the best way to reverse that is to take over your local party and take over your local government.
Excellent, excellent. We're speaking this morning with Jerome Armstrong and Marco Melissas, author of Crashing the Gate. I love that title. And I understand you will be in Portland next week, on Sunday?
Yeah, we are. You can go to crashingthegate.com and it details the information. I think we're going to be at Powell's at some point on Sunday and then a few other places. And then we're going to be there on Monday as well. And I believe we're going down to Eugene on Monday. Before that, on Friday and Saturday, we'll be up in Seattle and Olympia.
Excellent.
But the information is available at crashingthegate.com.
Well, we have pretty much run to the end of our time. Sometimes with the membership drive, it makes it a little shorter of a program, and there's just so much we didn't get the chance to touch on. We'd love to be able to have you come back via telephone or satellite or any kind of way we can get you and discuss some of the ideas for strategizing and for taking over. As you mentioned in your book,
And there's so many parts that we didn't even get a chance to really touch on. You've got a chapter on taking over. You've got a chapter of investment. And it seems that in terms of us really being successful as a progressive movement, mobilizing the party.
And in the introduction of your book, you have a
right.
quote from Gandhi that mm-hmm. I think is excellent and will inspire all of us. First they ignore you, mm-hmm. then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then
and
you
then
win.
You win.
Excellent. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
That was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
And we've been speaking with the authors of Crashing the Gates.
Yes, Jerome Armstrong and Marcos Moulitsas. This is an opportunity, if you enjoy having authors, political pundits, analysts, columnists, various folks who are deeply involved in the politics, not only of the moment, but of the movement, this is your opportunity to support community-based, commercial-free, corporate-free radio. Here on Cable, we've had the opportunity to bring you people far and wide to talk about issues, to bring you here. Yes, it's true, we lack a little bit of the technology to be able to have you come and be live with your questions. But the fact is, you've heard articulated time and time again, what we need to do is to rethink how we're approaching our politics. How do we bring a message that's clear and really gets to the root of what we need to accomplish? So often we've relied, I say we, meaning the Democratic Party. That's not necessarily true for KBOO, because all of KBOO is not necessarily Democratic. But I say in terms of being able to really push forward, we rely on some of the old flabby techniques that are no longer useful in today's political arena.